First of all, we now know that it is an addictive substance. You know, we have the neuroscience evidence to show us that a person can be easily become addicted to this, and it can take over their lives.
That's Dr. Peter Kleponis, our featured guest on this edition of Come Receive the Light, and what he's talking about is pornography.
It's what I call the five A's. It's affordable, accessible, anonymous, accepted, and aggressive, right? It's affordable, it's free, it's accessible, it's just a click away. It's anonymous, it's easy to hide, it's not like being drunk in public. It's accepted. In today's society, particularly among young people, viewing pornography is totally acceptable. And finally, it's aggressive. In other words, right through the eyes, right to the brain, instant gratification.
And if you think pornography is a dark pit only men fall into, well, think again. Dr. Kleponis is a research expert and a family counselor, and he'll be with us to talk about those five A's plus a lot more in the second half of our broadcast. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is the founder of this ministry and the president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross Orthodox School of Theology, Father Christopher Metropoulos. Come Receive the Light is the flagship outreach of the Orthodox Christian Network, a ministry dedicated to using media in all forms, audio, video, and print, to share the Orthodox Christian faith and God's Word, the Bible. We're on the web at myocn.net. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, Pinterest, and just about any other social media venue you can think of. Help us spread the word. Tell your friends about the Orthodox Christian Network. We start today's broadcast with an uplifting story of strength, faith, and God's grace. And here on the phone with our guest is Father Chris.
Mary Evelyn Smith is our guest today. She's an elementary school librarian, and she also has an interesting blog entitled, What Do You Do, Dear? With a question mark. We've asked her to be with us today to talk about life, her son, and raising a child with a disability. Welcome, Mary Evelyn.
Hi.
Nice to have you on the program from Ohio, correct?
That's right, in Columbus.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we have many bloggers who write for our popular blog, The Sounding. So let me ask you this question. What inspired you to write a blog? Because a lot of people are starting to do that.
Yeah. Well, in 2012, my husband and I found out that we were expecting a son and that he had a condition called spina bifida, which is a neural tube defect that occurs along the spine, usually early on in pregnancy, about 28 days into pregnancy. And I think writing a bit about the process of receiving that diagnosis and, you know, what life is like for our family and kind of processing through all of that was what got me started.
And he's, what, 4 years old now?
Yeah, he's four now.
4 years old. Bless him. Great. Well, the question, I guess you said part of it, but let me go a little bit deeper. I mean, what benefits do you find in writing this blog?
Well, I think part of it is kind of, writing is a great way to kind of work through and process some of those experiences, but the internet kind of allows you to connect with a lot of different people as well. So through writing, I've got to know a lot of other families who also have children with spina bifida or other disabilities, different diagnoses, and getting to know other families and share our stories has been really encouraging and kind of helped me to understand a lot of different perspectives.
Let me go, and please tell me if I'm being too personal and you tell me to back off, but how do you talk to your son about the limitations that he has with his disability?
Well, so my son, because of the way his spina bifida affects him, is he uses a wheelchair for mobility to get around, and I think because he's still so young, he's not necessarily, you know, fully processing the way that you or I would. His differences, but we encourage him to do the things that he's able to do and push him to try new things. He's really, really mobile and independent in his wheelchair, so he doesn't necessarily need a whole lot of help when it comes to getting around. He likes to explore new places, and so as far as how we talk to him about it, we're just honest about the things that, you know, he needs help with, and that's kind of the way that it's always been for him. I think a lot of times as adults who don't have disabilities, sometimes these things are maybe harder for us to process certain aspects of it than it is for, you know, the person who actually lives with it when it's all they've ever known.
Well, what misconceptions do most people have when they come across your family and the wheelchair?
Well, I think a lot of people kind of have an assumption that we must not get out a whole lot, which we do. We get out a lot. My son's really mobile, and, you know, most public spaces are accessible, and, you know, so we do a lot of things as a family. We get out a lot. We go to the zoo. We go out to eat. We travel, and so I think that's one misconception. I also think there's maybe an assumption that it's a sad thing a lot of the time. And the truth is it's kind of just normal life for our family, and it's not something that kind of, you know, brings us down all the time. We're a happy family, and we have a lot of fun together. I think that, you know, there are days that are rough, but those are not most days.
Well, it sounds like your son is not going to allow you too many negative days. Because he's someone who's out there. That's for sure. Is he an altar boy by any chance? Or is he able to serve in the altar?
He is. That's a new thing for him. So he recently started serving in the altar. Now, he is young to start. Mm-hmm. So he started a little bit young. So he does not, he's not doing the full service quite yet. He participates in the great entrance and the little entrance. So he gets to hold a candle. And at this point, my husband kind of helps him to wheel around. He pushes the wheelchair from behind so that Simeon has both hands free to hold the candle. Simeon is my son's name.
What a beautiful thing.
Thank you. So he is participating, and he really enjoys it. And we were lucky because there's my daughter's godmother made him an altar boy robe that doesn't have to go over his head, because it would be kind of difficult to get into an altar boy robe while seated, you know, to get it kind of under his legs would be tough while he's sitting in the wheelchair. So she designed one that's fully open in the back, and it just has a Velcro at the top in the back. So he can put it on front ways like a smock, and then we just Velcro it in the back at the neck, and he's ready to go.
Tremendous, tremendous.
Yeah.
You know, when people face, obviously, they call it now a new normal, when you didn't expect this to happen in your lives, and it did. People are usually surprised to find how they rise to the occasion. So let me ask you, and again, it's another personal question, what surprised you the most in this experience about yourself and your husband?
I think I realized personally that I myself had a lot of misconceptions about people who were different, people who have disabilities. I think I assumed a lot of things, you know, that many of us assume growing up in the culture that we do, that, you know, those people were different, were sad, were kind of, you know, maybe had a rough go of it, you know, every day of the week. I don't know that I quite realized how able someone with a disability is until I met my son. So I think that really surprised me about myself. And I think it helped me to have an empathy that I don't know that I possessed before I met my son. And I think, you know, overall, it's a positive experience. I don't think there are many people who would look at, you know, their child and say having that child was a negative experience, and it's the same way for us, you know, even with his differences. He's a great kid, but he's also a really normal kid. You know, I laughed on the first day he got to be an altar boy. I know, you know, it was a great day and really special, and I know a lot of people were moved by it, but, you know, I had to laugh because, of course, you know, right after his part in the great entrance was over, he, you know, started acting up in church just like any 4-year-old
like
boy.
Any other,
you know,
child, exactly.
He started, you know, popping wheelies and spinning in circles. I think he was excited. He was excited to be wearing the robe. So, you know, he's a typical kid, and I think it's been a blessing to know him.
That's wonderful. Earlier this year, we interviewed Faith Tree and their series on Christian manhood. They also hosted a webinar, which I know you participated in, to make worship more available to people with disabilities. So let's change the question a little bit and reach out into parishes. What do you think parishes can do to help families with children who have disabilities?
I think that's a great question. I think one of the biggest things for us has been the fact that the parish that we're in, everyone in the congregation kind of expects my son to participate. So we don't have to ask if it's okay for him to participate or make special requests. It's kind of always assumed that he'll be, you know, just like any other member and any other child, that he'll participate fully in the life of the church. And I know that as parents of kids with disabilities, we often find ourselves having to ask if our child can participate because, you know, the truth is our kids sometimes need things done a little differently. But sometimes it can be hard feeling like you need to request participation rather than having participation assumed. So I think any parish, if there's a family who has a child with a disability or if there's an adult with a disability at the parish, assuming that that person will participate and finding ways to make that possible is huge. It's very, very welcoming in and of itself to know that you're valued and that you're, you, if you have a disability, are valued, or if your child has a disability, that they're valued for who they are and for the ways that they're able to participate. We had, our parish did not have an accessible church school building, and so some parishioners approached us and said that they wanted to get together a group of people to build a ramp so that my son could access the church school building, and that meant a lot. And again, you know, we didn't have to go and ask and bring up the issue. They kind of anticipated that need and showed us that it mattered to them that our son be a part of the group and participate as well.
Well, as we know, that every person is created in the image and the likeness of God, each one with their strengths, each one with their weaknesses, and it's up to all of us to complement one another. So, Mary Evelyn, I thank you very much for being on the program. We give glory to God for your strength and for your family and your witness. People who want to find your blog, tell us how to get there, please.
It is www.whatdoyoudodear.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Doesn't she just sound like someone you'd like to visit with when the pressures of the day seem just a little too heavy? What a blessing to hear this family's journey. Mary Evelyn's web address again is whatdoyoudodear.com. Again, it's whatdoyoudodear.com. And if you don't remember it, remember ours, myocn.net. We'll have a link to Mary Evelyn's site on our site. Again, myocn.net. And now with our feature conversation, which at times may be just a little too graphic for younger listeners, here again, this time on Skype, is Father Chris.
Science is finally offering evidence to show what the Church knew all along. Pornography is addictive and damaging to our bodies and our ability to have authentic relationships. With us to talk about pornography and the tools to help recover from this addiction is Dr. Peter Kliponis. Dr. Kliponis is a licensed clinical therapist and assistant director of comprehensive counseling at Conshohocken, I believe I pronounced that correct, Pennsylvania. He is also the director of clinical programs for Integrity Restored, a website designed to help Catholic men recover from pornography. Welcome, Doctor. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
How is pornography harmful?
Well, it's harmful in many ways. You know, first of all, we now know that it is an addictive substance. You know, we have the neuroscience evidence to show us that a person can be easily become addicted to this, and it can take over their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, other ways, you know, we know this is something that, well, first of all, it is a sin because it is a form for married people. It is a form of adultery. Mm-hmm. And for single people, it is a form of fornication. And ultimately, it feeds on lust. And what is lust? Lust is simply using another person for your own sexual pleasure, whether that person is a live person or an image somewhere, whether it be a photograph, a video, or even in written form. Still, you know, lust is fueled. It's fueled by selfishness and this pursuit of using other people for your own sexual pleasure. Thirdly, it takes sex outside of God's plan for sexuality. You know, when we look at God's plan for sexuality, there are basically three parts to it. I call it the triple O model. Offspring, oxytocin, and orgasm, right? Mm-hmm. Offspring, it's meant for bringing new life into the world, right? So it needs to be open to that. Not always does it happen, but it needs to be open to that. Oxytocin, it binds people together. Oxytocin is the binding hormone that you know, binds people together emotionally. And so that's a very important part of it. With pornography, there is none there. And third, orgasm. Yes, it feels very good. It's a wonderful gift from God. All right. Now, in order to have this sexual encounter within God's plan for sexuality, it needs to be within the healthy bonds of a covenantal marriage. All right. So this is what it's all about. You know, it's all about binding people together in marriage, bringing in new life, and experiencing it as a wonderful gift from God. You know, in the Catholic Church, we talk about how every time a couple engages in the marital act, they're renewing their marital vows. So pornography takes it totally outside of that realm. There is no binding. If you're bound to anything, it's to an image on the computer screen. All right, there is no life coming out of that. Really, its focus is solely on orgasm, which is, again, it's very selfish. Essentially, you're reducing to sex to nothing more than a recreational activity where people are simply using each other, and the goal is to have the most powerful orgasm possible. Again, very, very selfish. So we see on many different levels why pornography is wrong. Fourthly, unfortunately, where a lot of young people today learn about sex is the internet, simply because they're not getting the talk at home, they're not learning it at school, so they're going to the internet, which is naturally leading them to pornography. So they're not learning about healthy sex. What they're learning about is dangerous sex, physically and emotionally and spiritually dangerous sex. In fact, today, pornography is the new drug of choice. And why is it? Well, it's what I call the five A's. It's affordable, accessible, anonymous, accepted, and aggressive, right? It's affordable. It's free. You know, you have to buy drugs and alcohol. This stuff is free, right? It's accessible. It's just a click away, all right? You know, and if you have a portable device, it's anywhere you want it to be,
right?
It's anonymous. It's easy to hide. It's not like being drunk in public. It's very easy to hide, right? It's accepted. Today, in today's society, particularly among young people, viewing pornography is totally acceptable. You know, I've worked with many young people who say they're at school in the cafeteria, they're sitting around the table, and they're openly talking about pornography.
Wow. Right?
And finally, it's aggressive. Right? In other words, there's instant gratification. When you drink alcohol, you have to wait for it to go through your bloodstream before it goes to your brain and you feel the buzz. With pornography, it's instant, right through the eyes, right to the brain, instant gratification. You know, in fact, this is one of the reasons why many people call internet pornography the new crack cocaine, and it's one of the reasons why it is so addictive. So it's these five A's that make it the number one drug of choice right now.
Well, I've read, too, that the average age when a child first encounters a so-called hardcore pornography is 11, and many times it's by accident.
Yes.
Because of this, I believe you've divided minors into two groups, those under 11 and those 11 and older. Can you talk a little bit to us about that, please?
Exactly. So, actually, I have new evidence out now that's telling us that, you know, the average age today when a child encounters internet pornography is 8.
Ooh.
All right, 8%. So, you know, 90% of men by the age of 12 have experienced some type of internet pornography. It is really just unbelievable what this epidemic is. But, you know, I divide kids into two groups, those up to the age of 11 and those 11 and older, basically up until middle school. So the younger group is the group that we need to protect from pornography. They shouldn't even know this stuff even exists.
Right.
I mean, parents have to be that protective of them, you know, monitoring everything they're doing. You know, you never leave a child alone with the internet. If they're online, you're right behind them. You're monitoring everything. You're putting filters on. You're making sure everything is protected, okay? 11 and older, we need to start educating them on the dangers of pornography, because they're going to go out in the world and they're going to encounter it. It will find them. That's the age when a lot of schools are giving kids tablets.
Right.
And even though they may have, you know, filters in the schools, you know, those filters may not work once they're outside of school. And plus, that's the age, unfortunately, when a lot of parents are getting their kids smartphones. So kids are coming to school with full access to the internet, and they can be looking at all this pornography on their own. So at that point, we need to educate kids on the dangers of pornography, looking at it more as an addictive substance like drugs and alcohol than a sexual issue. We need to educate them so they can be able to say no to it.
Okay. Let's go for a minute to women and young girls. I think we've been speaking about young men and men at this point. Do women and young girls also become addicted to pornography, or is it just a problem for the guys, so to speak?
Well, traditionally, we thought it was only a men's issue, but we found out that that's wrong. Women are viewing pornography, and they are becoming addicted to it. You know, we have evidence now that about a third of all visitors to pornographic websites now are women. Right. So they're looking at it. Now, for women, it's a little bit different. See, you know, we men, we're pretty simple. we are mainly visually stimulated. So, okay. You know, we want to look at pictures. We want to look at videos. Women, though, are more relationally stimulated. They're looking for a relationship. You know, this is why women like things like romance novels and soap operas and chick flicks and reality TV and so forth. It's the promise of a sexualized relationship that stimulates them, all right, and you know, and gets them turned on sexually. So for a woman, the types of pornography are much broader. It's not simply the visual pornography, but it can be in written forms, you know, erotic stories, racy romance novels, blogs. I'm sure many people are familiar with the 50 Shades of Grey books that were out a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Really, it's pornography disguised as a relationship. So women can be interested in many different types of media, but they are still all of a pornographic nature. Now, this is also very dangerous for women because we find that women are also more attracted to chat rooms. Now, of course, in a chat room, you can be anybody you want to be. You can be a tall, blonde, voluptuous supermodel. But women, they get into these chat rooms and they have these very sexual, very pornographic chats with strange men that they meet online. And you know what's really going on is it's almost like they're creating their own racy romance novel, and they're the heroine. But this is what they can also become addicted to, are these chat rooms. I've worked with women who will come home from work and spend hours in the chat rooms. What makes it dangerous is that studies have shown that these women are actually far more likely to want to go out and meet these men that they've encountered online, which can put them in a physically dangerous situation. Sure. In other words, a woman can go out thinking she's going to have this wonderful romantic rendezvous with this great guy she met at a local, you know, online, and they're going to meet at a local hotel, when really she could be meeting up with a serial rapist or murderer. Right? And this has happened many times. So, you know, this addiction is actually more dangerous for women than men.
It sounds that. It certainly does. Let's go on to another question. You focus on integrity when fighting porn addiction. Where does integrity fit into the picture, please?
Okay. Well, when you think of a fully integrated person, you think of a person that's real, down to earth. What you see is what you get. All right. There are no secrets. They can be real with you. They can be fully authentic with people. A person who's usually using pornography, usually for them, it's this deep, dark secret that they don't want anybody to know about. All right. So the person is divided. Their life is split. There's the image that they show to the public, but then behind closed doors, there's this private image of themselves of using pornography. So, you know, when it comes to overcoming pornography addiction and recovering from it, it means, you know, no longer having any dark secrets, bringing out of the darkness into the light, totally, you know, healing and recovering and overcoming this, so that you can be that fully integrated person. You can present your full self, who you are, to everybody. There are no masks, there are no secret lives, and really, you know, that's, you know, living life to the fullest.
Sure.
Living life as God created you to live.
Okay. Well, finally, doctor, let me ask you, do you have a book that you could recommend to parents on how they can protect their families?
There are two books I want to recommend. The first one is called Integrity Restored. It's a book that I wrote. Came out about 2 years ago, and in that I have chapters on how to protect families and how to protect marriages. So that's one book that I recommend. There's another great book that recently came out. It's called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. And it's written to help parents, you know, explain the dangers of pornography to young children. So let's say your child is 8 or 9 years old and he's come across some really bad pornography online. How do you talk to him about that?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and work through that. This book, Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, is an excellent book that can help parents with that. You know, hopefully, you know, your children never will encounter it that young, but if you do, this is a good book that can help you with it.
Doctor, thank you very much. This has been an incredible conversation. We appreciate what you're doing and calling people to live in integrity before the Lord. You've given us quite a bit of information. And listeners, I hope that you will go out and purchase the books that the good doctor recommends here. And if you know someone who is suffering and having a problem with an addiction to pornography, that they reach out and get the help they need at this time in their lives. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
To make it a little easier to get those resources, we're going to have a list of them on our website associated with this radio broadcast, and you can order them through our web store. There is a link on the homepage of our website to our web store, and when you do that, you generate a donation to this ministry. This is Come Receive the Light, an outreach of the Orthodox Christian Network. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. We come your way each week, and we are supported by listeners just like yourself. When you go to the website, again, myocn.net, you can click on the donate link and see all of the ways that you can join with us financially. Again, that's myocn.net. Please tell your friends about the program, invite them to listen, and remember, until then, to always have faith in what you listen to.